How's everybody doing this week?
Oh, I'm all right. I had another COVID test Saturday, so that was exciting.
Yeah, I got one last Thursday, negative. Well, not detected.
Yeah.
Which I guess is negative.
How's it going where you're at, Ian?
I mean, New York is kind of the spot to be right now, I think. We have like zero deaths. It was hairy there for a minute, but we're good now. Yeah.
Zero deaths.
Zero deaths, yeah.
Dude, that's wild.
Dude, yeah. It's so good. I'm glad, man, because New York went through the fucking ringer.
It was crazy.
New York got its ass handed to it, and because it's so dense, you can only imagine visually that must have been intense. Am I wrong? I don't know. You know, I mean, it must have been hard.
Yeah, I mean, and you could just, like I was saying, I mean, it was just ambulance. Like, it started to be a little bit like, you know, like, feel a little crazy, you know?
Yeah.
Nuts, man.
But it's good now. I mean, everyone's good. Everyone wears masks. There's hand sanitizer, like, everywhere. And,
nice.
You know, that's it. I mean, there's no indoors. We didn't even, like, you know, fuck with that at all. So,
there's none now?
No indoor. No indoor bars, no indoor restaurants, good. zero indoor anything. I mean, I'm a bartender, so.
No way.
It's like, yeah, I'm a bartender. I mean, I've been a bartender for like 15 years. I've been a sober bartender for like 2.5 years.
Really?
Oh, okay.
That's great.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, you know what? You got to read Pat DeWitt's book. What's the old book called, Danny? Pat's old book. Abolitions.
You know, I'm like the luckiest bartender in New York, actually, because I used to bartend in Manhattan for like years and years and years, which I always thought was like a bulletproof job, right? When the economy's down, people drink. When the economy's up, people drink. I worked at this bar called the Spring Lounge on Spring and Mulberry in Little Italy. It's one of their, you know, bars used to be open in New York for 24 hours, like way back. And then after Prohibition, they dialed it back and said you had to be closed from 4 a.m. till 8 a.m. So then all bars were open from 8 a.m. till 4 a.m. And they've been slowly dialing that back, like when they give out new liquor licenses, when old ones close. But there's 4 bars in Manhattan that still have the old liquor license. And the Spring Lounge, until COVID, was open from the day after Prohibition until it closed down for COVID from 8 a.m. till 4 a.m.
No
365.
Way.
I work the 8 a.m. till 2 p.m. shift.
Is the Spring Lounge in the East Village? Where is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of in Soho. It's kind of called like the Shark Bar. There's like taxidermy sharks all over. I'm sure you've been there. Yeah.
Glass window. Shotgun to the back. Back room. One red light.
Sound bar. That's it. Spring Lounge.
No, I was in that bar once and, it's a bad fucking scene. That bar was like in the 80s.
It's a long day.
That bar was a bad scene. Like there were dudes like sitting in the back area, like pretending to play cards, shooting heroin, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah. And yeah, I remember that. And I went there once with a handful of guys in college and then was like, oh, this might be my spot. And went back a number of times. But one time I came out of there and a dude was getting his head bashed in with a fucking bat. And I don't really know who was involved with who. And I just fucking turned on my heels and head the other way, you know, I'm sure I was, you know, in rough shape and lest I would get my head bashed in with that bat. So, you know, it was the time. I just was like, what's up? And I was like, okay, I got to go. I can't be involved. That sucks. I should have probably, now that I say it out loud, I probably should have stopped and helped.
Help the guy?
Well, Mike. But I was,
I said, yeah, Mike.
Yeah, well, I was a piece of shit, man, Mike. At that time. You know, I was 22 years old at that point.
Nice.
I was a piece of shit.
You guys ready to get started? Welcome back to It's All Bad. I'm Keith.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. I'm Russ and Danny.
I'm sorry.
And we got Ian Sorti here with us today.
We do.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
So reminisce.
Yeah, Mike and Ian are reminiscing about.
Well, as soon as I saw that you were an East Coaster, I was like, and then I looked at the art on the site, and I was like, ah, this motherfucker's got some good taste. And I was, you know, Ian's art's very this kind of found stuff. It feels very, it just reminded me of Joseph Boyce, and I was like, oh, this is super neat. And I responded. So, anyways.
How long have you been in New York, Ian?
I'm from New York.
Oh, cool.
So I grew up here, yeah. When I was born, my parents lived here in Brooklyn in Park Slope. But that like 1982. Mm. And that was the height of like crack. All my grandparents are from New York. Like my grandpa's from Staten Island. My grandma's from Manhattan. My other grandma and grandpa are from Queens. And both my parents grew up on Long Island.
So you got to see the really great New York. Until like 2000.
Oh, yeah. No, I just been here. I don't know. I went to college here. I moved away twice. I moved to Vermont for a year once. I moved to Vermont twice. And then I moved to Colorado for a year once. But other than that, I'm just here.
That's great, man.
Yeah.
You're in Brooklyn now?
Yeah, I live in Brooklyn. I live in the neighborhood's called Cypress Hill.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like East New York. It's right. You would know it if you ever drove in Brooklyn. It's right where the Jackie Robinson Parkway
is. Okay.
It spits out where Broadway Junction is and Jamaica Avenue.
Oh, I know exactly where that is.
I live on Jamaica Avenue, four blocks from where the Jackie Robinson comes in.
Nice. Wow. Okay. Yeah. I love Brooklyn. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I haven't always lived out here, you know, like. When I was in college and stuff, I lived over in like Bushwick and Williamsburg in 2000. But that's like, now that's like Whole Foods and Apple Store. It used to be like.
Bushwick is?
What, Bush? Yeah, pretty much. It's happening fast, man.
It's so crazy.
I work at a craft brewery in Bushwick.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of like that a little bit. I go over there and make money, you know.
A craft brewery in Bushwick. Can
100%.
You fucking imagine it?
Fuck.
But I love that, man. Like those neighborhoods. I remember going back in the day, early 90s, going to Carroll Gardens when friends of mine who were like theater people and actors and, you know, out of work people, you know, people who didn't work that much. Would go and find these places, and they were all Italian neighborhoods, all old school. Like Carroll Gardens was where like gangsters basically put their grandmothers. You know, like it was totally. Very safe, very old school. And now blown up, like just blown the fuck up. Like it's a whole different level of the thing. What's as crazy as it's got for you?
Like in my life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man, I mean, really at the. So I basically, I mean, I'll tell you the story, but I grew up, you know, when I was a kid, I was here in Brooklyn and then, but it was like the 80s and crack and everything. My parents moved out to a town on Long Island called Babylon.
Yes.
Which is, that's as far east as you can go, but still get an express train to Manhattan. Cause my father worked at a hospital here. So like when I was growing up, we were... you know, I would come into the city all the time with like my grandma and stuff. But then I started like skating when I was 13 and the commuter train was right across the street from the high school. So we would just like jump on the train and be in the city like all the time.
Skating? What do you mean skating?
Skateboarding.
What the fuck do I know? I thought he was talking about skating on a thing. I don't know.
Mike's picturing Ian with like a pair of ice skates.
I don't know.
Let's go to the frozen lake.
skating, yes. I don't know.
What do you mean the internet, Ian? What's the internet?
All right.
You know, I grew up like a half an hour east. And it was like it was like a super, super waspy upbringing, like pretty much the most that you could ever imagine. Like, I mean, my father's parents were from Queens, you know, and like they were kind of like working class. He grew up in Comac, but my mother's parents were like from Manhattan and Staten Island. And they like, Mike will know, like my ancestors were like with Roger Williams when they founded Providence, Rhode Island, you know.
Ooh,
like,
no way.
Like, yeah, like old school.
On which side? So my mother's side or your father's side?
That's my mother's side.
Oh, so she's well, descended of Roger fucking Williams?
Well, her ancestors, did you know any Greens?
Yeah, they were in Providence. All over fucking Rhode Island. Yeah.
So my grandma's grandma Green, my mother's Green
Airport. I mean, you know, like,
and Fort Green. It's a whole thing.
Fort Green. But, oh no, shit! This motherfucker's old money.
Yeah.
Oh,
but that's my mom's side. Yeah, I mean, it was like kind of like that.
That's right.
And then my father's mother was from Cuba. Her name's like Jeanette Arnez. Her father was from Cuba. Mm. They came, so it was like he grew up kind of North Shore. It was kind of poor. My mom grew up on the South Shore, so it was like country clubs and beach clubs and the whole fucking thing when I was a kid. But then when I was like 13, got into skating, got into punk rock, and that was kind
of
like
the end.
I made a hard turn away from that.
Dude, bro. Like, yeah, I mean, we have a lot in common, man. I never got into skateboarding, but that kind of, yeah.
So, you know, me and my friends, we started, you know, I mean, it was just a hard turn because there was like no going back. You know, it was like the punk scene was like pretty, pretty real, you know, like everyone was like pretty committed on Long Island. And there was like pretty much like politics and punk and skateboarding was all kind of like coming together. And there was like, we did like a Food Not Bombs in my town. And there was like Nazi skinheads like murdering migrant workers out on the end of the island. And it was just like.
In Staten Island?
On the east end of Long Island.
Okay.
So like, you know, we were like, I joined like an anarchist reading group and we started like organizing like protests to go down to DC and like protest against, you know, global capitalism. And we were like, in on the Lower East Side, like in the 90s, like trying to like save the community gardens and like all the squats, and like some kids burned down like a housing development on the east end of Long Island because it was like for environmental rights stuff, because it was in the wetlands, you know, it was like in defense of our, you know, like Earth Liberation Front stuff, you know.
Wow. We were just going to clubs, man. I didn't know about that burning down housing developments element.
Yeah, you know, everyone was kind of serious then. Like the animal rights kids were like going to like pet stores and like kidnapping the monkeys and shit and like sending them to safe homes, you know. It was like everyone was just kind of serious.
Hey, that's great.
Yeah.
I love that shit.
Yeah. So that's kind of like what I was into, you know? And I didn't really party then. Like by the time, like when I started getting like doing bands and doing punk stuff, like everyone kind of like went straight edge and got serious about like just doing political stuff. So I kind of like did that for most of high school. And I was just like delivering pizza and like saving my money and like getting ready to like get out.
What did your parents say when you, started getting into punk and started wilding?
My mom cried for 4 years. My mom would just look at me and just fucking cry. She would just cry so hard. I'm like covered in tattoos, you know, and like she was just like not. It was, but yeah, she's not into it. I mean, she cried. Me and my mom just, you know, anyway. Yeah, we're good now. Yeah, we're good now.
Well, that's part of the thing. You guys are good? Yeah?
Yeah, we're good. We're good now. I mean, but pretty much, I mean, I sent Charlie a copy of my book.
Yeah.
And I wrote that book like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I've given out like about 1,000 copies of it to like everyone I knew from the punk days, everyone I knew from the political stuff, every member of my family. And it totally kind of transformed my life and like my relationship with all these people, including my family. Cause they had just like no fucking idea what was going on. Yeah. Like I remember when I was a kid, you know, because my mom comes from this super conservative thing. My dad grew up poor. his father was a cop. His father's father was a cop. His father's father was a cop. And he was like, kind of got out of that. And he's just said, like, the whole time I was growing up, he was just like, you can do whatever you want in your life. I don't care what you do. Just be happy. Just don't upset your mother. And then my mother fucking she cried for 4 years straight and was just so, wow. And he was just so fucking mad at me. And then I moved out to Colorado after high school and then was just like doing political organizing stuff then too. Cause like 9/11 happened. Like I graduated high school 2001, 9/11 happened. And then we were doing all this organizing to try and get them to not bomb Iraq. You know,
yeah.
We forget about it. There was like this period after 9/11, but before they started the war that we were like, don't do it. No, like anything, just don't fucking bomb Iraq. It's going to be a fucking nightmare. And we didn't win that fucking fight and they fucking bombed Iraq. It was a fucking nightmare. But then I was like out there and like things were different, you know, like on the East Coast, it was all like everything was so much more like heady. Everyone was more like philosophical and serious about everything. And then I moved to Boulder, Colorado, and it was like way more like West Coast, you know, everyone was just like wild. Like yeah. all like the anarchist kids that I knew were like from like Portland and Seattle. And they were just like, they were like blowing up SUVs up there and shit like that.
You know? Yes.
It's like riding freight trains, like blowing up SUVs and just be like a whole, just like, and they, you know, had fucking dreadlocks and smoked weed. And I was like, all right, you know, so just kind of like got into that a little bit, but I was like, basically like a year started going by and like, I like didn't see any future, you know, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And like, I was like being cowardly and I wanted to break up with my girlfriend. So I was like, I'm going to go back east and go back to college. So I ended up coming back east and I went to the University of Vermont for a year. Basically the plan, my whole plan when I was in high school was to, cause like when I was like 13, my fucking social studies teacher, like got me turned onto like Karl Marx and it like blew my mind and like got me really fucking excited. So like my whole plan was that I was going to like study anthropology and then I'd be a high school art teacher and like turn on all these fucking kids to Marx. That was like basically my plan. So I like moved to the University of Vermont and like start doing all this like organizing stuff up there. But I get there and like the most vocal and most organized political presence on campus was the communist kids. They were like the International Socialist Organization guys. And I was into like anarchist politics. So we were friends and we would like get together and we would like organize together. We did like this anti-war thing and we would like meet in downtown Burlington, Vermont. And fucking Jerry from Ben and Jerry's would come to our meetings and buy us pizza and shit.
Oh, no shit. And, fucking
yeah. Yeah. We had a protest in front of the fucking newspaper there and fucking he like laid down in front of the door with us to like, because
they weren't reporting on the fucking solid, bombing. Man. They're solid. Like yeah. They put a lot of money in the right fucking place.
Yeah. I got Netflix and chilling in the freezer right now.
So do I. is that
a fucking god?
Swear to God, yeah.
The new one. Yeah.
Yeah, dude, it's fire. It's
dude, a good
what's guy. In Listen, it? What's the, in that? Just tell me real quick.
Chocolate covered pretzels, brownie, and peanut butter ice cream.
Fuck that. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, dude.
I got a pint of that and a pint of Americone Dream.
You it's got it too, yeah.
Yeah, dude. It's funny because, like, right after all the, like, you know, after all the shit came out, because, like, you know, like, I'm a Jew, you know, whatever, like, you know, so I'll go to the store and I'll be like,
no,
oh,
I had
sale,
no
you know?
Idea yeah. actually that you yeah. were Jewish.
Yeah, well, now you know. Yeah, I mean, I'm a Jew that was like baptized in the Russian Orthodox Church. It doesn't really follow any of it, but I have a Jewish mother. And when I go to the store, I
That's
can hear
counts.
Her voice. Yeah. I can hear her voice saying, oh, you're going to buy the $6 Ben and Jerry's pint, you know, and I've just seen all the cool shit they're doing. Like, I am, you know, like, there's always going to be a pint of Ben and Jerry's in my fridge. Yeah, it's great.
Dude, all right.
Stoners, come on. Back to you.
So there's this, so I'm hanging out with all the fucking communist kids. Like, I'm the anarchist kid. We're friends. We're doing all this political organizing. And we were just, but we were, like, 18. and 19. So we were just like also just fucking partying and just like trying to live. So I remember I was like hanging out with Commie Doug and we were like go downtown because like some of these older kids, like there was like this rap jam band called Manifest Next to Me. That was like,
God damn. I hate everyone in that band.
But all these kids, the older kids would like have parties downtown. So we would like go downtown. We would like, I don't know if you've ever been to Burlington, but like the college is up on the top of the hill. Mm-hmm. And then like, there's like downtown is like where all like the big houses where all the kids party. So I remember I'm partying. So me and Doug are like, we gotta go to this fucking party downtown. Like, there's gonna be fucking girls there. It's gonna be sick. So we like, we walk down the hill. We have like a bottle of like Carlo Rossi. We're just like, yeah, just like hitting it off the elbow.
Fuck yes.
And like, so like we're getting there and we're at the party. There's all these people there, and Commie Doug and I are just like, we just start talking about politics, and then we start getting like mouthy about it. We start getting loud. We're like you know, fuck you, like you're fucking commie bullshit. Commie Doug looks at me and he's like, Ian, I want you to know that the International Socialist Organization here on campus has all been going to Aikido together. And if you don't watch what you say, I'm going to fuck you up. You know, I was like, really? You know, because I actually know how to box. I actually grow. I'll get into that later, maybe if we get to it. But like, I grew up like two houses. I grew up four houses away from like the only half pipe in my town. And like, we used to skate. And then my buddy got into kickboxing in high school. And they put four posts up on the flat of the half pipe. And they made it a ring. And we would fucking box back there after school.
No way.
So anyway, so we're fucking up at this party. Commie Doug's like, I do Aikido. Like, you don't fuck with my communist politics. I'm going to fuck you up. I was like, let's go downstairs right now. And I remember when we're out there and it's this fucking snowy night and there's fucking snow everywhere. And it's just like me and Doug and like a couple of hippie kids come down and we're just like standing there. And I just look at him and he kind of like gets in the stance, you know, and I just pop him right in the face. He just drops immediately down to the ground. And he just like one hit, he just like hits the floor. And I'm just like, and I like look at him. I'm like, are you good? You know? And he's like, yeah, I'm good. I'm like, do you want more? He's like, no. I was like, okay. So we fucking get up. We walk back up the hill to the house. There's like a house there called the Slade House, which is like where all the hippies live. Cause they like buy their food. Like, it's like a co-op and they like, they have to cook. Each guy has to like cook a meal once a week or something, but you get like a sick room in this house. So he was dating this girl, Hippie Mary. So it's like me and Doug and Hippie Mary. We keep fucking drinking the wine. We're like smoking weed. And then all of a sudden, like the door swings open and it's fucking Commie Keith and Commie Kathleen. And they've been at some like other fucking party. And they look at Commie Doug and his eye is all like swollen up and puffy, you know? And they're like, Commie Doug, what happened, dude? And he's like, Ian fucking hit me. And they're like, if you hit one member of the party, you hit every member of the party. So fucking Commie Keith, Commie Kathleen, Commie Doug, Hippie Mary, all start coming, jumping on me, you know, and we're all drunk. I'm fucking fighting them off, like doing my thing. And like, I kind of get up at one point and fucking Hippie Mary jumps on my back and gets me around in this like chokehold, you know? And I'm like trying to fight him off, but I kind of start to actually like, I'm losing it. And we go and I fall back through the door and under the weight of my body, we all hear and I feel her leg break. Dude, yeah, it was fucked up. So she has the ambulance, hospital, and we're talking about the University of Vermont is like, you could ice skate to class, you know?
Yeah, right.
I could have skated to class if I had a pair of skates. It's a fucking ice field and fucking Hippie Mary on crutches for the rest of the fucking school year, limping around in the snow. I felt so fucking bad. I made her blueberry pancakes in the morning, aww, you know, and that was like basically, that's like, that illustrates like so much about my entire story, where it's like everyone goes, everyone around me and partially because of me ends up getting super fucking hurt. And then I like try and make blueberry pancakes and like make it okay, you know? But
that should be the name of your next book, Blueberry Pancakes.
Blueberry Pancakes, yeah. I'm going to put it on the list. So I was up there in Vermont, but just for that 1 year. When I was, I stayed in touch with all like my punk friends from Long Island, like especially this kid Jamie, who I had met skateboarding when we were 12. He was like the sickest skater that I knew. He had this like sick like 360 flip that was just like so fucking buttery, and like everyone was just like, "You are the man." And he like saw me. I had like made an Operation Ivy t-shirt in art class, and he was like, "Oh yeah, you're cool," you know. So we were like became friends, and we like hung out all through high school, and he was into the political stuff too. But then that, when I went home for Christmas break after I broke Mary's leg, I went to the city, and Jamie had moved into New York, but he was supposed to go to Hunter College, but he didn't go to class at all. And then 9/11 happened, and he called, and he was like, "I'm too scared because of 9/11 to come to college. Like, can I have my money back?" And they were like, "Sure." So they gave his dad his money back.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So anyway, I like come down for Christmas break, and Jamie is fucking squatting on the Lower East Side now on Houston and Second, which like literally the Whole Foods is across the street. I mean, it was like one of like the last squats like down in that area. So Jamie's like, I go and like see my parents, you know, and like that's not cool because like we're not yet getting along. And I come into the city, I like stay with the squat with Jamie at the squat, and he's like, "Dude, I'm like gonna get a band together and we're gonna fucking do it seriously. Like we're gonna like fucking make it real. You gotta move down to New York and you gotta play bass in my band." And I was like, "Jamie, I'm your fucking dude, man." So, so I transferred college. I finished out that year. I transferred down to Hunter College and then moved into Brooklyn. We got like a loft out in Bushwick. We got like two other guys from Long Island, and we put a band together and just were like, basically the idea was go like, basically, we thought the only way you could do a band and like actually get anywhere with it, or like actually like make a great record, which was kind of our dream, was to just be totally 100% super fucking committed. He was like, I remember him saying to me, he's like, "If you have to fucking forsake your family, if you have to break up with your girlfriend, if you have to quit your fucking job, if that's what you have to do because that's what you need to do for the band, then you have to be ready to do all those things." And I was like, I got you, bud. Like, for sure. Let's do it. I will forsake my family. I will break up with my girlfriend, and I will quit my job and move to be in your fucking band. So we got this loft in Bushwick, and it was just like this big fucking empty room. And we built like little like cubbies. It looked like Hollywood Squares, you know, against one wall. Like everybody had like a little downstairs that you could stand up in and have your shit. And then there was like a little like 4 foot zone up top where like you had your bed and you could kind of sleep up there. And then we just had all the equipment set up, and we played every single day. We would just like practice every day. We'd go work our shitty job. We play every night, and we just started. It was like kind of a great time to be doing music in Brooklyn, you know? Like 2002 in Brooklyn, like it was fucking amazing. You know, it was like so affordable. Like now there's nowhere, although we'll see what happens, because New York is emptying out right now.
Dude, for sure.
Like, I mean, I still work. Like I still work 3 days a week. I just like talk to people. It's like talking to people, and so many people. And like, so I work at this craft brewery in Bushwick, and like, so all these people are just coming in and just like buying cases of beer to go and stuff. And heading out to, you know, everyone that has a second home is leaving for good, But like a lot of people that have like houses upstate and stuff, they're leaving and they're like never coming back. Anyway, that time in Williamsburg before they rezoned it to be residential was just like this golden time. So we were like right there. We had this like sick loft. We had this band and we were just like committed to going as hard as fucking possible with it. So
what are you guys doing? Were you guys doing drugs or were you guys taking the music that seriously?
Yeah. So like basically it's like, you know, I would say like by the time I got back from Vermont, we had kind of like Jamie had like shifted his like commitment from like organized politics into just more of like a all out personal fucking Dionysian assault against society, you know, which was like, you know, and like, and I was kind of like into it too, you know, like I was like, yeah. So we were like smoking a lot of weed, taking a lot of psychedelics and just drinking a lot. I mean, we were young, you know, we were like 19 at the loft we lived in. There was a fucking soda machine in the basement and there was dollar cans of Bush in it. Like the landlord would just fucking stock it out. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, totally. So we were just like, you know, like we had a guy's number, like a Coke guy's number, but we were kind of broke, you know? Like, I'm sure that if I was fucking grew up on the West Coast, I would definitely be fucking dead or in jail right now for sure. I don't know how you like the first time I came to LA, I smoked meth. The second time I came to LA, I crashed my car. And the third time I came to LA, I got pulled over drunk driving. You know, I don't think that fucking lifestyle was going to work for me, you know?
Yeah.
We were drinking a lot. We were drinking a lot, but we were like drinking beer. I mean, for the whole thing, if like you asked me what my like drug of choice is, I'm like kind of like just like fucking a beer drunk, you know, just like a good old fucking beer drunk.
Yeah.
But at first we were just drinking a lot and fucking smoking a lot of weed and we played every night. So we weren't like, I never really knew anyone that was like into meth out here. And the heroin didn't come in for like a couple more years. You know, it's like, if you even think about it, it was like, it kind of just wasn't even, you weren't even like hearing about it really in 2002 out here, you know? It wasn't until like more like 2008 that you really started hearing about it. I mean, for sure. So like at first we were just like drinking a lot but we were like, we had a plan for like our first four records, you know, like we're going to make a fucking first record and like we were going to then just like push that out into the world and we're going to play every night. And then the second record was going to get put out on a label. And then we're going to fucking keep playing every night and go super hard. And then like, by the time we were on the fourth record, it was going to be like a fucking gatefold and there was going to be fucking rock and roll saxophone all over it. You know, it's just like, we were like the fucking, like we had like a plan for the picture of the whole, how the whole thing was going to go.
What was the name of the band?
The band was called Bent Out of Shape.
Bent Out of Shape?
Bent Out of Shape. Yeah. You can listen to our second record on Spotify. It's just there.
Oh,
cool. It got put out on a label, an LA label, actually, which is how I ended up out there, which is how I ended up smoking meth the first time I ended up out there. Like, so we're playing every night and like basically our weed dealer and like we're buying a lot of weed. Our fucking weed dealer decides he's going to start a record label and put our record out. So like we basically paid for our first record by like buying so much weed from this guy that he had enough money to put our record out. So we like pressed fucking 1,000 LPs and we bought an old short bus from a school district in New Jersey and we fucking spray painted it to look like a giant watermelon and we fucking toured across the US. We played a show in like 40 states or something like that. We did like a full like DIY book your own fucking life tour of America. But like our first record was just like about how fucked up we were, you know. We record a second record and we send it out to all these record labels and this record label in Long Beach actually called Recess Records. Do you know those guys?
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, So basically the second summer we get in the fucking school bus and we go tearing across the country again. We get out to LA and I mean, basically we show up and the plan, it was actually back in the day when you could still buy ephedrine at the fucking CVS
in New Jersey.
So like we fucking drive out of Brooklyn. We drive to the fucking truck stop in New Jersey. We just buy like a fucking case of fucking ephedrine and we just fucking like tear across the country. We get out to LA and basically the rule was always like no drugs in the van. Because like it was painted like a giant fucking watermelon. It was like a short bus. Like we looked like a fucking, you know, it was kind of crazy. And like we never got fucking pulled over. But we were always like, you have to do all the drugs. You know, like no drugs in the van. You have to do them all so that when you get back in the van, if we get pulled over, we won't get busted. And we fucking roll into fucking San Pedro, you know, and I remember we're feeling like triumphant because we're like driving in the van and there's like the sign that says San Pedro and it looks like the cover of the Minutemen record, you know, and we're like, yeah, we fucking made it, dude. And like Mike Watt was like playing our record on his radio show, you know, and we were like,
oh wow.
And we were like, you know, we had made it to our second record. We were like still planning, you know, we were only two records away from Rock and Roll Saxophone, you know? And like they fucking we get out there and there was this band called Killer Dreamer. It was just like another like local punk band. And like the first night they're like, do you guys want to go hang out at like, it's like the Sunken City or something. It's like it's like all this like broken up like sidewalk. That's like kind of right on a cliff somewhere in San Pedro. Does that ring a bell?
Down by Palos Verdes. There's an old resort there.
Yeah. And it's just all like crumbling into the sea and it's all like covering graffiti and shit. And we just like go there and they're just like, they just like bust out a pipe and they're just like, let's fucking, you guys want to smoke? And we're like, yeah. And it's just like fucking crystal, you know? So we just fucking start smoking off with these guys. And we stayed up for fucking 3 days straight there in the fucking house. And we're just like, I remember playing, we did a cover of fucking Jonathan Richman's song, Girlfriend. I remember playing it like literally like 50 times straight. We're just like just like the bass line just like getting into the groove and like Jamie going into the solo. And I fucking remember the next night we like go to like tear into the song and like we get to the part where like Jamie's gonna like tear into the guitar solo and it's just like he had fucking burned all the guitar solos. He had burned every single guitar solo out of his mind. It took him like 2 weeks of just like, he would just like, just kind of skip them for the first few shows and just make the songs faster. And then like, he had to relearn every single fucking song. But that being said, we're going super fucking hard. I'm screaming every night, like saying yes to every fucking drug, like having sex with everybody I fucking possibly can. And like, basically we get back from tour to Brooklyn. And like, normally I'd get back from tour and like I would lose my voice on tour and then I'd come back and just like drink throat coat tea and fucking eat Slippery Elm shit. And it would like eventually come back and that tour, it like was gone and then got worse. And then eventually I couldn't make a single sound. I was completely inaudible. If I tried to speak, totally lost my fucking voice. And I was like, what the fuck? So I like actually went to a doctor and the doctor was like, your vocal cords are supposed to look like a smooth pair of like silvery airplane wings. Your vocal cords look like a pile of bloody grapes, which is not right. And basically I had contracted a super rare chronic throat disease called reoccurring respiratory papillomatosis. It's what fucking Michael Douglas Douglas got fucking throat cancer from this fucking thing. Yeah. So it was a combination of fucking my vocal cords being super shredded from screaming and smoking and drinking and then fucking giving as much oral sex as I possibly could. And I fucking got a terminal, like chronic fucking STD on my vocal cords.
Yeah.
And that was the end of my fucking rock and roll career.
Wow.
Yeah, so that year was fucked up for me.
Dude,
and
that's
I was
hardcore.
Like having a fucking I'm having a personal crisis because I have to quit my band now. I'm 23. I had committed my life. I had forsaken my family. You know, I had like done the whole thing, committed everything to fucking be in this band. And I was like having a crisis. Mm-hmm. And then that fall, I was going to Hunter College, still studying cultural anthropology. I took a drawing class to make my course load light. And like I went in and like the third class, I brought in some like crazy fucking like assemblage of like dumpster yeah. trash that I had like made in response to like a drawing assignment.
Yeah.
And the fucking TA in the art class was like, you know, I don't know what it is. It's like a rare thing that you see, but you could be an artist if you wanted to. And I was like, really? I was like, perfect. Because I fucking need something to be with my life. Like, I don't know. I need something to do, you know? I was like, okay, fuck. I'm going to be an artist now. So I like, you know, I fucking switched my major to fine art. I fucking started studying the history of art. I just started like doing all this. I started studying performance art, like you were talking about earlier, Mike. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Joseph Beuys, but then like all this like New York performance art, like Vito Acconci and like all this crazy shit. And I just started like doing all this crazy like street performance in New York.
Yeah.
And then like so that I could keep a free studio in New York City.
Sure.
If you went to Hunter College, if you got into the MFA program at Hunter College, you got a free studio in Times Square. So I was fucking like,
Christ, that's
so
amazing.
I was like, I took all this fucking work that I had done and I was like applied for grad school so I could get a free studio at Hunter College. But I also applied to Yale and I fucking got accepted to Yale for my MFA in art, which was a big fucking surprise to everybody. Yes. Especially like my mother and like my fucking grandmother. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't even expecting to get there. I was like, I got a job working as the night clerk at the fucking medical library, which was a sick job because the library was closed. So I just had to sit there and people would come in. And I'd just be like, library's closed. I would eat mushrooms. I would just like get so high and just eat mushrooms and just go fucking sit at the fucking desk in the medical library and just be like sorry, library's closed. You know, so you know, I was fucking there, but then I was also like having a little bit of you know, I was just like still bummed about like leaving the band and having all this shit. So I would still go down to New York and like see Jamie and stuff. And that's when those guys really started doing heroin. So it was like, so I got to, I was in grad school 07 to 09. And I start going back and like fucking visiting those guys. And like they had started doing heroin and I was like snorting it with them, you know, but like nobody was shooting it yet. And like, because I would just do anything. I was definitely like a guard. Mm. Like, I would never say no. I never say no to any fucking drug, any drink. I was just like, yes is the fucking answer.
Yep.
So I was there that fucking first year going down. And like, my performances were like, I was walking back and forth from New Haven to New York, like carrying different shit, you know? Like, that was like kind of my thing. And then I was like, that summer in between the 2 years, I fucking went to Paris and fucking partied my ass off over there, which was super fun. I challenged every French guy that I met to a boxing match and I got one of them to agree to it. And I fucking flew him to New York City and set up like an official match at Gleason's boxing gym in Brooklyn, which is like the old school famous one, and fucking invited like my entire grad school class and everyone that I ever met and fucking duped it out with this French guy down there. This was kind of like, this is like my rock. This was my sculpture, you know, this is my sculpture.
This is an art project.
This is my sculpture. Yeah. I was like, I was getting my master's in sculpture. So that this is like what I was submitting for my sculpture. You know? And like, so then I did that. And then I remember I came back from Paris, met up with Jamie. We fucking met this, like, this kid was dating, like, our friend that was our old girlfriend. He was, like, dealing acid. And we just fucking just took all the acid that he had, and then we just took as all of it. I don't know how. It was just, like, hits and hits and hits of acid. And we took this, like, epic fucking, like, 10-hour fucking walk all around New York City. And I remember I was wearing a fucking brand new pair of black tassel loafers because my fucking sister was getting married the next day. And I remember at the end of like our fucking like epic fucking thing where we like, you know, figured out all the answers to the universe, he threw me on the back of his like pook scooter, you know, and like no helmets on or anything. And he like cruises me over the fucking Williamsburg Bridge. I remember looking down in the fucking toes of my brand new tassel loafers clipping across the fucking pavement, and I went to my sister's wedding the next day tripping my fucking ass off, and I had to read from the Bible in the Catholic church in front of my entire fucking family, and I definitely screamed every fucking word. Every member of my family, like afterwards, they came up to me and they're like, "Hey, Ian, really heard you, bud. Like, you really, really, like, got it on with that fucking, like, with that reading, you know?" And, like, and then we stayed up until, like, fucking 4 in the morning, like, smoking weed with, like, my old waspy uncles. You know, when I got back, I went and I found my friend Jamie, like, one last time before that fall. And he had started shooting. And you know, it was kind of like, you know, I always felt a little bit like, I always kind of like doubted that, especially after I got into Yale and everything. You know, I came from this fucking super waspy like family, and then like I was like going against it so hard, but I always felt like a little insecure that like no one was really fucking buying it, you know, or something, or that like I was just like, I was exposing myself or not really fucking committing so hard, which is partially why I think I always went like a little bit too fucking hard. And I shot up with him that last time, and then went back to fucking Yale. And I'll never forget, I'm like, you heard like what my sculptures are like. My sculptures are like, you know, boxing mats or the fucking Frenchman, fucking like walking back and forth from New Haven to fucking New York. I remember I was teaching this class. I was TAing for one of my favorite professors, this woman, Jessica Stockholder. And the student's art project that we were going to critique that day, he had dug a fucking 3x6, 6-foot hole in the ground. And he had spent the night down in the hole as his sculpture. So he had dug a fucking grave behind the fucking sculpture studio, and he had laid in it all night as sculpture. You know, this is kind of like the shit that was going on in art school, you know? And, and the night before was the fucking night that Obama got elected. So it was November 5th, 2008. And fucking as I'm critiquing that sculpture, my phone rings. And, like, the person that's calling me is the old drummer from my band, and he never called me. And, like, before I even fucking picked the phone up, I was like, fuck, Jamie's dead. And, of course, he fucking was dead. So that was fucked up, you know? And that was, like, 2008. And that was kind of, that was even right before, like, you all started hearing about fentanyl and all that shit, you know? Like, I know that he had, like, we looked at his text messages in his phone and stuff, you know, and it was like,
yeah.
So the guy was like, yeah, like, because he had been like clean and then not clean and clean and then not clean. Some guy was like, yo, there's this shit. It's like so fucking good. You got to get a taste or whatever. So that was fucking that.
Wow.
And that fucking twisted me up, man. You know, that twisted me fucking up. And then I was like, that's November. I had another year in grad school. I fucking finished grad school, but my performance got like increasingly like aggressive and alienating. Basically, by the end, they were like, do you not want to like graduate from this program? Or are you like, I didn't show anything. I showed I had an empty room for my final exhibition. I did this fucking performance the night before I was supposed to submit my grad school work. I actually sent a picture of it. It was like a 2-act play. The first act was kind of in drag. And then in the midterm, I like shaved my head and I glued it on as a beard and came out for the second act. It was like, you know, the myth of Tiresias.
Yes.
Anyway, so Tiresias was like this magician that turned into a woman for 7 years and then like fucked all the senators and then turned back into a thing. Anyway, so after grad school, I ended up fucking walking out to LA.
Were you after Jamie passed? Did you do heroin anymore? Or?
Yeah, but so like that was never really my thing, you know.
Yeah,
I was always kind of like psychedelics and stuff. But then, you know, after grad school, I walked. My friend and I we walked from New Haven to St. Louis, and then we like rode a we walked from New Haven to St. Louis, and then we like rode a tandem bike from St. Louis to Venice Beach. Yeah, dude. This was like basically the whole thing was like, you know, my whole life was this like kind of like this was kind of like what I was doing, you know, and I was kind of like, the idea was that I was just gonna kind of like keep pushing it forever, you know, like keep like upping the stakes and doing the crazier thing. And I was like, I had this idea. I was like, I'll quit art and like I'll start acting. But I have like a radical approach to acting. So like, if I want to be an actor, I need to be in LA, but I'm not just going to fly to LA. So I'll walk there, you know? Wow. So, yeah. So we like walked from New Haven to St. Louis. It took 4 months and we were like, we drank every night. We stayed good on weed. We didn't smoke meth. We like saw tweakers along the way, you know? But we basically were like, if we're ever going to fucking get there, we just have to move every day, you know?
Yeah.
So like, you know, walk to St. Louis, and then Boris like breaks his ankle in St. Louis, or he rolls it really hard. And we were walking like 25 miles a day. And then we started walking like 7 miles a day. So we were like, it's going to take 3 years to get to LA, you know? Like we don't have fucking 3 years, you know? Like we have like a year. So we like we got a tandem bike. We fucking
Like in a bike shop?
We were in St. Louis and Boris just found someone that was selling one on eBay or like this guy just like had one. It was like it was a beach cruiser. It was like a beach cruiser tandem bike. And he had like a Burley, you know, those little like nylon bubbles, you guys know, you know. And we fucking just started tearing across America. It took us 2 months to get from St. Louis, but we picked up a dog. We picked up a stray dog in Oklahoma City. It's like a deaf blue heeler named Becky. I had a snail. I had this Israeli snail named Shmuley because I was like back in New Haven. I was dating this Israeli chick. And she had like accidentally smuggled this snail back. And like, so we had Shmuley and Becky and me and Boris. We're fucking like tear all the way from, we basically took 66. You know, 66 runs all the way from Chicago. It runs straight through St. Louis. It runs all the way out to fucking Santa Monica.
Yeah.
So we fucking rode all the way from St. Louis to Venice Beach. And, you know, basically I got there. And then immediately, like, I was like, you know, basically I had convinced myself that I was like doing like a lot of psychedelics. And I was like, had convinced myself that I was having this like kind of like communication with like the fucking divine, you know, I was like, I'll do anything. I will do anything you tell me to do, no matter how crazy it is, as long as you keep telling me what shit to do. You know, this is kind of like this is the pact that I had made. That's how you end up fucking walking across the country or fucking, you know, doing this shit with Becky. I'm like, I'm just like, walk across the country. That's what I got to do, you know? So like, I got out to LA and I started like hanging out with this like curator chick. And I was basically like, all right, like this person is going to kind of like show me the fucking way, you know? So like,
yeah.
I like organize a record collection and like, I start like chauffeuring her around. I end up like helping her do sound for some music, for some like art openings there, like up in LA. And one night we're just like partying at the art opening, just like fucking drinking whiskey, the whole thing, like just going at it as normal. And we're just like up somewhere on Santa Monica Boulevard. And then we have to go back to her place in Venice. And I hadn't really been driving, you know, I'm like, I hadn't really driven since high school. Like I toured with the band, you know, but like wasn't really used to like having a car. So we're like driving back from the fucking opening and we drive past the cop and he's got another guy pulled over. And I see him just like look at me, like go by. And then I'm like, fuck, my headlights aren't on. And it's like the middle of the night, you know? So I like click my headlights on and he just like let that other person go and immediately just like, whoop, whoop, just like lights me up and just like pulls me over. And I'm just like, fuck, you know, like this is not good, you know? So like the fucking, he like walks over and I'm just like fucking there. The curator chick is there and he's like, roll down the window. He's like, excuse me, sir. Like, have you had anything to drink? And before I can say anything, this chick goes, he's my driver. And she just starts acting fucking insane. She just starts like banging on the fucking like windshield. And she's just like, he's my driver. And I'm just like, I don't even know what's going on. I'm just like, officer, I haven't had anything to drink. And she's like, are you sure? And I'm just, and she's just like, bong, bong, banging on the window. She's just like, starts acting like insane. She's just like, la, 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 la. Just like acting like a fucking crazy, bizarre person. And I'm just like, officer, I'm from New York. I'm just driving her home. Like, she's just like out of her mind. And he just didn't want to have anything to do with her or whatever. And he was just like, gave me my license and registration back and was just like, keep your fucking headlights on and just fucking let me get out of there. I mean,
that's amazing.
I mean, I'm also like, just like a pretty like, clean looking white guy, you know, so like I'm privilege made that fucking easier for me. I mean, my whole career was pretty much like just going super fucking hard, people fucking getting fucking dying, breaking their fucking legs around me, and I was just kind of fucking getting away with it all for like a pretty fucking long time. I know I've been like talking for like ever, so I don't want to like go on and on, but I
Well, when I'll do you feel like you stopped getting away with it?
Yeah, so I mean, basically, I came back from LA to New York. I'm like living in the West Village, tending bar in the West Village, still drinking my, you know, we would show up to work and we would like drink in, you know? It's like 11:30 in the morning. We're like, I mean, this is a bar in the West Village. We have a drink right when we got to work. And then if it was slow at work, we'd like run around the corner to the Kettle of Fish and do a shot of whiskey, because if one of the bartenders leaves, you know, it's going to get busy. You know, it's just like drinking, fucking partying. I get invited by the guy that owned that bar to move to Vermont and help him like open a bar. And then he's like, save $10,000 and we'll start a company together. So I moved to like a tiny town in Vermont with like 3,000 people. And my wife is a painter. And I was like, Eleanor, if we move to the country, you don't have to work. You can just like focus on being a painter. I'll work. And then like, I thought that I was like going to be like a business owner, like a bar owner or something. I thought like everything was just going to kind of like fucking keep working out. I was like, I couldn't be in my band, but then I got into Yale, you know, like I couldn't, like, I didn't know what I was going to make art, but then I'm walking across the country. And then like, I have the job in the West Village and now I get invited to be like a bar owner. I just like was kind of convinced that as long as I said yes to kind of like everything that came, that it was just going to keep fucking marching forward. Then like I'm in Vermont and like for the first time in my life, I'm living with another person and I'm drinking a lot, you know, like all day, every day. Oh, now dude. I'm like in Vermont and I have to like drive. I'm like, you know, she's like coming home and she's like, what's going, what the fuck is this? Like, this is not normal, you know? And I'm like, you know, so then the whole fucking rigmarole, you know, I'm like, try and quit for 3 months, but then like not, you know, and just like, basically skipped it along in Vermont. Things were good enough for her to like marry me. but it was still just like working at a beer bar there. And basically we started a company together and the company failed. So like I lost my investment. The house we were living in, we got evicted and like they put the house through a wood chipper and like everything I had going on in Vermont just kind of fell apart and we moved back to New York City. And that's when I started working at the bar on Spring Street that opened at 8 o'clock in the morning. And that was the first time that I worked at a full bar. I had always been just like working at beer bars. And I show up at 8 in the morning and like all the regulars show up and these guys just start drinking heavily, like right away. And like, I'm still on my thing where I'm just like never saying no to anything ever, you know? So it's like 8:15 in the morning, you know, fucking like Slick Ray walks in and he's just like, hey man, you want a shot? I'm like, yes. You know, it's like fucking the suit walks in. Hey man, you want a shot? Yes. You know, it's just like, yes, yes. Like always. Yes. There's this cast of fucking characters that comes into the bar at 8 o'clock in the morning, you know? There's the cops, there's the firemen, but then there's also like the hardcore fucking drunks. And there was this one fucking guy, we'll call him Herman the Suit. So anyway, okay. Herman the Suit had fucking made millions of dollars on like a hedge fund in like the early 2000s. He had an apartment uptown. He had like gone to like to Harvard or something. He's kind of like this super proper suit guy. He sold his business in like 2007. Now, this is 2015. This is like 7 years later. He would wake up every morning, put on his suit, tell his wife he was going to the office, get on the fucking C train uptown, take it downtown, and come to the fucking Spring Lounge and start drinking. And he was fucking there. He was there 5 days a week. It was his work week. He would come in, tell his wife he's going to work, just like full suit, fucking in the winter, the fucking cashmere trench coat, the buffed and shined shoes, and he's heading to the office. And he's just like, I mean, at first he'd come in and he'd be like super fucking like quiet, you know? And then you'd get like 2 double vodka sodas in him, and he's just like fucking standing in the bar, you know? And he's just like running around town the whole fucking thing. But
that's amazing. And was he holding on to any of that dough? I mean, was he
still? Oh yeah. He had a girlfriend. His girlfriend was this like super tatted girl, like chick from Brooklyn that he would just like put up in fancy hotels and just buy them drugs. And he was just like, but on the weekend he would just like go out to the club and everything. But, and his wife thought he was going to the office. He kept the whole facade going, full wow. suit, the whole thing every day at the bar. It was amazing. But, you know, basically there at that bar, I mean, and this is basically kind of like what my book is about. I'm so excited to get you guys my book. And I actually, I just this week, I'm releasing the second book, which is like a part 2 that I finished, nice. Which I'm even more proud of. And I'll send all you guys copies of it. But, cool. Yeah, I mean, that first book, I was standing in that bar, like looking out that big fucking fishbowl window. And I was like, just, you know, I was just waiting for the fucking, I was like looking for a sign, you know? It was like, first it was like that guy, I couldn't do the band. And he's like, oh, you could be an artist, you know? I'm just like, there was always like, oh, like, you don't know what to do. Like, come start this business with me. I was just like, I was convinced that someone was gonna fucking come and like tell me like what the next fucking thing in my life was. And then like at one point it just fucking like washed over me. I'm like looking out the window and I realized I was like waiting for Jamie, you know, to like fucking come walk down the street. And I'm just like, dude, he's not fucking coming. You know, he's dead, you know? And like, I kept drinking. I like worked at this other bar called Spritzenhaus. It was like this, fucking German beer hall. And I would like, you know, I could hold it together when I was working at beer bars, but then like the full bar, I would like have to close that bar at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And like, I would lose track. I wouldn't remember. I'd wake up in the morning and not remember anything after like 10:30, you know, everyone there is just like, there's so many people on the shift, do a shot when they get on, people getting off the shift, do a shot when they fucking leave. And it was just bad. Just like fighting with my fucking wife. I was miserable, just fucking miserable, like hating the world. You know, I had convinced myself that the fucking, like, I was having this fucking communication where I was like getting like the next fucking thing. And then all of a sudden the communication stops, you know? So I'm like, I'm mad at the fucking world for stopping the communication. I'm mad at myself because I'm like, you know, I thought that I couldn't not go to the party because I'm like, what if that person's at the party that's going to give me the next clue to the next big thing, you know? Like, what if I got to go into the bar because if I sit down, what if she sits down next to me and she's got the next fucking clue? Like, I got to get there. I got to buy her the beer so that I can fucking keep this thing going.
And this was caused by hallucinogenics, right? For sure, don't you think?
It wasn't not caused by them. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
What about, hey, you ever see a ghost?
Yeah, definitely. For sure.
Oh,
can we hear that?
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to finish what I was just saying and then I'll tell you my ghost story. So okay. Like basically that was it. Like when I had like become friends with all these, like when I got into being an artist, I had become friends with all these like downtown, like amazing people from like the 80s and 90s who were still around. Just like dancers and artists. They had been like in the ACT UP movement in the 80s. And like,
yep.
We all got along because it was like making sense. Like politics and art and like resistance, like in New York City, was just like all welded together. And I was like rolling with these guys. And there was
Is it like Penny Arcade and that crowd?
Yeah. I mean, who was still alive from that crowd? There were still people living at the Chelsea Hotel, you know, like Renee Hart was still at the Chelsea Hotel.
Yeah.
And like, this guy, Stanley Love, was this dancer who I had been friends with, and we had partied our fucking ass off together before I went to grad school. I hadn't really seen him. And basically, so this is a perfect example of what my day had become. I wake up at like 8:30 in the morning. I go into my studio. This is in my house where I live with my wife. I go into my studio and I like pull out a few books because I have open beers stacked behind a few of these books. So I'd open them the night before so she doesn't hear me cracking them in the morning. I like drink a couple beers. I go and I brew some coffee. Then I fucking go. I brush my teeth. I make some coffee. Then Then I wake up my wife. I'm like, hey babe, like getting ready. Like I made you coffee. Like, don't you love me? And she's like, get her ready. We eat some breakfast. I drive her to the studio. Then I fucking drive over to Williamsburg. I go to the fucking Irish bar. Downstairs at the Irish bar. Fucking 3 pints of beer. Now I'm ready to go to yoga class. So I'm fucking like, get ready. Like walk over to fucking yoga to the people. Like I'm loose, you know, I'm ready to fucking take it. This is like a fucking person that's like a divided fucking person that's trying to follow two fucking like forces pulling in the same thing. So I'm like going to yoga class. I'm drunk. And like, as I'm fucking walking up the stairs to yoga class, I fucking run into Stanley Love, who was that dance choreographer that I had like been hanging with. And he was from the 80s. He had spent time like in the drag balls, like uptown, like Paris is burning shit. Like he was like there for all that. And I run into him and he had been haggard, especially with crystal meth. Like, cause like gay sex and meth, that's really the only place you really see it in New York City. But anyway, he had been way out. And like, I run into him on my way up to fucking drunk yoga. And he looks so fucking good. He looks like a million fucking bucks. His eyes are shining and he's like healthy and he's like, looks great. And I'm like, Stanley, what's going on? He's like, oh my God, I'm teaching dance classes to kids. I have a show at the kitchen next week. I've been sober for 8 months and like, I'm just like happy. Like life is good. Like I'm getting my career together. Like everything is like happening. And I was just like, it like struck me, you know, I was like, you see me now. I was like 45 pounds heavier. You know, I was like, I was hurting myself and drinking a lot and it was just like bad and hating myself hating the world. And he said that to me, you know, and like 2 days later, basically I went like to work. I got super fucking drunk. I came home. I lied to my wife about it. And I was just like, she was just like, you're a fucking liar. You're a fucking asshole. And I was like, you're fucking right. So I fucking called Stanley Love. And I was just like, Stanley, like, I need to go to a fucking meeting, dude. And he took me to a fucking meeting. And that was like April 17th, 2 years ago. It was like, I just had 2 years back in April.
Wow. Yeah.
And fucking, it's pretty crazy. I mean, and you guys know, I got, my life is so fucking good right now. Like, I am making the best work of my life. In my first 90 days, I wrote that first book and like I gave it out to like everyone in my life. It's the thing I'm like the most proud of that I ever did. I like started making sculptures. I have a gallery in LA now. I have a show in November. My wife and I, like, I can be honest with my wife and like love her and like show up for her. Actually, like during quarantine, three people have called me and they were like, three people from my like scene have called me and they were like, I need help. I'm a fucking alcoholic. I'm crashing my life. Like, can you fucking help me? I'm like sponsoring friends of mine. Like, I'm talking to them every day on the phone, going through the big book with them. It's just like,
dude,
fuck. I had like a fucking total fucking spiritual fucking like breakthrough. It was like, and it was what I was fucking looking for the whole time. And unfortunately, fucking a year ago, I was out in LA. I did a performance at the gallery on La Brea that I write about in my second book. And while I was fucking out there, I came back and fucking Stanley went back out on crystal and died.
Oh, fuck.
So sad.
The second book is like dedicated to him, and he was like such a fucking beautiful person and fucking saved my life. So I'm like staying sober for him, you know, and for all these other people in my life, and things are good with that. I will tell you my ghost story. I forgot about the ghost story. I don't have a PCP story, but I do have, a ghost story. So, you know, when I was doing the BFA, when I went to Hunter College, I told you I was applying to grad school because I would get a free studio in Times Square, right? So it was basically on 42nd Street on the west side near the Port Authority.
Holy shit.
There's this old building, and Hunter College had all their MFA studios on the second floor of this four-story building.
Oh, wow.
So every fucking day, I would take the fucking train over there and go to my studio. It was like this old fucking industrial building that had been there since probably like it looked like maybe it was from the 20s or something like that. So basically it was four big stories, but you could go in, there was like stairwells at either end of it. And I'm a pacer, you know, like I have my best thoughts when I'm like walking. I walk in the fucking country, you know, like I'm a fucking walker. When I have to make a sculpture, I start walking between New Haven and, you know, I just like walking is my thing. So like I'm in my studio, but I would just like walk this circuit around the fucking building. And I was on the second floor. I'd go up to the fourth floor, down the hallway, and then down. Now on the fourth floor, all along the wall were these beautiful black and white photographs. Like these beautifully like developed black and white photographs from like the 30s, 40s, and 50s, mostly like of musicians, you know? So I'm like, going. Eventually, like I asked somebody, I'm like, what are all those photos upstairs? And do you guys know who Alan Lomax is?
Sounds familiar. I don't know.
So you know Folkways Records? Like you know who Alan Lomax is. There's like, if you think about a guy in like the 40s, driving around in the back of a truck with like a little like fedora hat and like a microphone, like recording blues guys. Like the reason we have recordings, he's like a character. He's like a trope. And he's like the reason we have recordings of all those early like bluesmen. He like went down to the South and like recorded all that stuff. So Alan Lomax's archive of all of his stuff was being stored on the fourth floor of the same building where the Hunter Studios are in. So all of his audio recordings are up there, and all the walls are lined with all of his photographs. So basically, I'm just walking this loop every day. Never anybody up there. There's never fucking anybody up on the fourth floor. I'm walking the loop. And one day I fucking walk up there and the door, one of the doors to one of the rooms is just open and there's just light coming out of it. So I'm like, okay. So I just like walk over, I push the door open, and there's an old woman sitting at a desk there. And I'm like, I like knock on the door and I'm like, excuse me. My name's like Ian Campbell. My name was Ian Campbell. I took my wife's last name, so I'm Ian Swarty now. So I'm like, my name's Ian Campbell. Like, I'm an artist. I have a studio down on the second floor. Like, is Mr. Lomax around? Like, I collect his records. Like, if I could meet him or like here, get access to any of the archive, like it would like change my like life. And she was just like, oh, Mr. Lomax has gone home for the evening. But if you come back tomorrow, like, I'd be happy to introduce you. He'd be happy to show you around. I'm like, amazing. I like go downstairs. I remember I call my mom. I'm like, mom, I'm going to fucking meet Alan Lomax tomorrow. Like, this is going to like change my fucking life. The next day I wake up, fucking go to my studio, walk up to the fourth floor, walk over, the same door is open. I go over, I knock on the door, and there's two guys my age. There's two young guys in there. I'm just like, oh, hey guys. Like, how are you doing? Like, is Mr. Lomax around? And they're like, dude, Mr. Lomax has been dead for 20 years. I'm like, what do you mean Mr. Lomax has been dead for 20 years? Like, the old woman in here told me that I could come up and meet him today. And they're like, there is no old woman. We're the only two people that have been in this room for 10 years. We're digitizing the Lomax archive. Nobody else has been in here.
Whoa.
Yeah, wow. Dude.
That's great.
I think this is my take on it. I think that those fucking guys, I think that them going in there had stirred something up.
And knocked it loose.
Yeah. It knocked it loose. And I went up there. Man. I think that back in fucking 1940, some crazy fucking tattooed punk fucking kid walked into that office and was like, excuse me, is Mr. Lomax here? You know? And they're like, And then no one showed up the next day, you know? Yeah.
That was fucking real, dude.
As all my stories went, I kind of got, I basically like destroyed, like lost all sense of like human dignity and like shit got kind of fucked up on the way. I never ended up getting really busted for anything. I think that a lot of that has to do with like living in New York. Not driving, and not really having meth around. Because if that shit was
around, that all the time.
You know, like I didn't have enough money to do enough coke to really get in trouble. You know, like I got into, like when I got back from LA after we walked across the country, I came back to New York and there was this like friend, like art friend of mine. She was sober. But she did heroin. Like, she was an alcoholic. she wouldn't drink. Like, she'd have me over and she, like, stocked beers in the fridge for her friends. And she was like, I cannot drink. You know, like, I don't drink. But I love fucking heroin. So we just, like, fucking do heroin and fucking, like, snort heroin and, like, watch Werner Herzog movies for, like, six months straight, pretty much.
Hey, I got to jump off real quick. Thank you, Ian.
Guys, thank you so much for entertaining me for this.
Yeah, ride. Man.
Dude,
I kind of get on a ramble.
Yeah. Not at all. That was wonderful.
Dude, thank you so much. Yeah, I got to get to my home group. I got to take a cake. The Big Five.
Cool.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Oh, nice, yeah, thanks, bro.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. Boom. Yeah. Dude, Ian, nice. Thank you so awesome. Much, man. That was rad. And congrats on 2 years.
Yeah. Thanks so much. I hope I'll be out in LA. Hopefully I get to see you guys maybe dude, in November. Mine's you guys can cruise by
yeah,
the show.
We'll show you around. Dude, that would be
I'd love to come to a meeting or something.
Dude.
Just chill with you.
Hopefully there's meetings. Cool. I mean, we got a few in-person meetings, but yeah, we'll definitely show you around. All right, dude.
Awesome. Yeah. All love, guys.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, brother.
All right, later, guys.
Hey, thanks for listening to It's All Bad. Like and subscribe. Our Instagram is It Is All Bad. Follow us on wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any questions, email us. If you have any complaints, write a check for $500 and write the complaint on the back of the check and send it to us. Also, we have merch, t-shirts, white and black. Order up and send us anybody you think would be a good guest for us. Thanks.